Welcome to One More Turn, a classic gaming podcast that's always free to play. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
And Kevin, joining us this episode to talk the first generation of Pokemon games, that's Pokemon Red, Pokemon Blue, and I guess if it comes up, we can talk Pokemon Yellow as well. We have researcher Jennifer Ash here. Hello.
Hi.
How you doing today?
Oh, good. You?
Busy over here playing Pokemon, that's all.
Kevin says, as someone who, before the show, had just mentioned he had never played a Pokemon game before.
Never. The only experience I have with Pokemon is living vicariously through all my nephews, who all of them owned all of them except for the ones we're talking today. In fact, they owned post Red Blue, post first generation.
So only remakes.
Correct. Yeah, they didn't get the uncut Pokemon. They got it all filtered.
The cools of Pokemon?
Oh, yeah. No, theirs was more like a Virginia Slim Pokemon.
I don't actually know what those are. So hello, Jen. So when we have a guest on, we always ask, what is a game that was significant to you growing up, or just has a very meaningful, you have a very meaningful, I guess, relationship in your life? So let me ask, you had suggested Pokemon Red and Blue. So let me ask, why did you choose these games?
So I chose Pokemon because it was during a part in when I was growing up that we were going through some family illness and sickness. And it was kind of post that, and it was one game that I really got into. Like, I can't even imagine how many hours I put into it after the game came out. And so it was a really interesting way to kind of put my time and focus into something after dealing with something that was a pretty large effect on my life. And so I became kind of obsessed with Pokemon when it first came out. I don't even remember how I found out about it, but I remember I got it when it launched. And I was just totally into it. I got Red. I ended up getting Blue. I was an only child, so I got two Game Boys with the link cable, because how else are you going to catch them all? I know, I went really into this. So that's why I chose Pokemon, because it's one of the things I put a lot of time, a lot of energy, and it really kind of allowed me to focus on something that was positive and, you know.
You know how you might have found out about it is when I was doing research of this, is the anime, the show cartoon premiered about 3 weeks before the game came out in America.
I actually didn't. I didn't see the show because I was like, psh, that's not something I'm interested in. But I was really interested in the RPG aspects. Mm-hmm. And so that's what drew me in, because the show looked kind of silly.
It totally is. Like,
yeah, and it is. It totally is. Which having some knowledge from the game actually made the show, I think, a little bit more interesting and a little bit more close to my heart. But I think a lot of kids did get into the game due to the show, though. And there's a difference between the people who played the game for the show and the played the game for the game, I think.
I completely can attest to that. Is that because I think the overriding themes that were present within both the game and the show, or at least what the player is doing in Pokemon the video game versus what Ash Ketchum is doing. And I apologize, but I've now just suddenly had the realization that for our Pokemon episode, we brought in someone named Ash.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's the real reason you got to do it. Just personal identity.
It is.
And so when playing the game, like, the training is done through like leveling up your Pokemon. And it's about, specifically, it's about like the combat. There's the combat focus in that there's a lot of the dialogue that really kind of that centers on this bond that it refers to about a trainer and their Pokemon, and about how there is this like eternal friendship between them all. But really what it kind of just comes down to is you're just hitting the A button a lot to let them just attack other people's Pokemon. Whereas in the game, while those fights exist, it's more centered, I guess, around the personalities and through this, you know, Saturday morning cartoon power of friendship scenario. And so like what you're describing as playing the game for the game and playing the game kind of based on the shows, I almost imagine like playing the game based on the show can be kind of disappointing in a way.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Maybe there's not as quite of a developed emotional connection between what you catch and I guess and the interactions that kind of take place in the game.
Yeah, and you lose a lot of the discoverability, I feel, which is the other thing. Like, the show, they catch them, they're like, ah, here's the, you know, Pokemon of the week. But in the game, it's new. You're figuring out, like, what are their types? What are their powers? I think to me, it also didn't help because I'm going to date myself now. I was in junior high. And so there was a divide between the kids in elementary school who watched the show, and there was the divide of, I'm not a kid. So I'm just going to put that in there, that probably played a part in, like, the people who watched the show versus the people who played the game, because there was, like, the people who played the game didn't really watch the show because it wasn't cool, probably. Mm-hmm. And it was, the marketing was really aimed at kids, right? Like, yeah. They were like, we've got something cute, let's do this. Whereas the game itself could be, you know, aimed at any, probably a little bit younger age range, but it was a solid game as an RPG. So I think that's probably also part of the appeal between the two of them. The yellow man, you got like a pedometer with your game. Like, how could you pass that up? It was like, get out and be exercising. Like, I wish I still could find that. But
oh, the pocket Pikachu? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You could see Pikachu playing a piano.
I know. It was so cute. Oh my God. It was worth it just to sit there shaking it. who needed to walk?
So that's actually what I remember from school is occasionally having the sound turn on my pocket Pikachu. And then it just mixing these little like dit, 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 dit noises. And immediately like four different kids immediately go for their pockets. Like it's almost like a pre-cell phone sort of world, right? Where like, of kids that forget to silence their phones in class. Except it was in like fifth grade at the time.
Yep, exactly. It was like the Tamagotchi, but not.
That's what I was thinking about, is I think that's why I originally got into the game, is because of Tamagotchi. Like, Tamagotchis were big, like, just a couple of years previously, and that was an introduction into this concept of a virtual pet, and, you know, I guess kind of having this emotional bond between something you are kind of raising digitally.
Yep, and I think, yeah, you're right. I think it was actually a year before that it was the craze, at least for me. That they came out and you always had those in your pocket. And then there was like a 2-year lull and then Pikachu came out in your pocket. And it was just like, oh wow. They just totally just rolling with that.
Jim, what was your growing up? What was your, how'd you get introduced to Pokemon and kind of get on that train?
I'd like to mention with Yellow first, before I get into that, that there was a very important thing about Yellow, not only because it was the first Pokemon game. I think it's only might be the only Pokemon game to this effect, where, you know, in the television show, the Pokemon, I think, generally make noises, they just state their name. There's some exceptions of, like, generally the larger Pokemon just kind of roar, like Charizard doesn't generally say Charizard, and Dragonite, the worst dragon in the history of design, doesn't say Dragonite, he just kind of, like, mumbles and bumbles around. Mm-hmm. And Yellow, when you first boot up Pokemon Yellow, in the blaring out of your Game Boy speakers is a very proud voice just pronouncing Pikachu. And that is, like, that was unheard of, I guess. I don't remember having like, digital voices coming out of my Game Boy.
Was it super muffled because it's Game Boy?
Yeah. Oh, it was.
Like, it barely sounds like Pikachu.
No, you could tell. You could tell. Okay. But yeah, all the other Pokemon, I mean, even in game, like in Red and Blue, like, you know, the Pikachus, the noises are very, they're abstractions of, I guess, what the monsters, like, or what the Pokemon would actually sound like. But also, with Pokemon Yellow, you got to catch all three starting Pokemon from Red and Blue in one playthrough. So you no longer had to make the choice of the Squirtle, Charmander, Bulbasaur choice, which sort of eventually defined your fate as a human being, and all the world would judge you based on the type of Pokemon that you choose. That was like, there's like the two main choices when people, you know, when we were young. And one, it was, do you have Red or Blue? And you said, Jen, you said you had picked up Red first. What?
I think so, yeah.
Was there something that weighed into that decision?
I don't I don't remember there being a defined answer for that. I think thinking back of which Pokemon I chose, I think for the most part I would always go with Charmander, and that might have been due to the show, because he was so cute in the show. And like the fire was awesome, and like he turned into like, you know, Charizard, and I think that might have led into the red choice compared to like the powerful dragon versus the I guess the war tortoise.
Let's
be fair. Nobody wants to be a turtle. If you have a choice between turtle and dragon, you're gonna or raptor, you're gonna go raptor dragon, right? I mean, you're not gonna like to settle for turtle.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because this was during a lull in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise. This is the in-between period, right? So turtles are out.
Lizards are in.
Yep, right. Lizards are in. Turtles are out.
We'll be right back on One More Turn.
Welcome back to One More Turn, where we're talking Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
And I'm Jen.
Like you said, Jim, we are playing Pokemon Red, Blue. For some reason, we didn't include Green and Yellow. I guess we just, you know, don't like those. I guess we don't like the third primary
Green
color.
Wasn't a U.S. release for a while.
You're right. It was created and developed by Nintendo, and specifically Game Freak, released in Japan in 96, released in the U.S. in 98. There was no, by the way, fanfare to bring it over. They just brought it over. Pokemon Red and Blue was directed by Satoshi Tajiri, who was a personal friend of Shigeru Miyamoto, and who worked on Legend of Zelda, worked on Yoshi, worked on Mario.
We know who Miyamoto is.
Miyamoto, yeah, I know. But this is how, it's very important. This is a fun little fact here. So in the Japanese anime of Pokemon, Ash's big rival?
Gary Oak,
I'm sorry. See, that's how much I know about it. Gary Oak. There's a town near I live called Glen Oak. That's why.
I see. Yeah, it's named after a Pokemon character.
Right.
The jerk from the show.
Gary Oak, named in the Japanese version of the anime Shigeru, and Ash is Satoshi. So, a little fun fact for you. That's
so.
Hang
on.
Rivals in the show.
Yeah, so is that implying that there is some sort of internal rivalry going on between the two of them?
No, Shigeru mentored Satoshi. In fact, he credits Shigeru for basically helping him come up with some of the ideas for the game, mm-hmm. and said he was a big influence. But basically, Nintendo doesn't pick this up without that friendship. So yes, it is, in that Saturday morning school special kind of way, friendship made Pokemon what it is today.
And Pokemon then made friendships.
And specifically, I think of note for this game is that it basically extended the Game Boy's life another 5 years, right when Nintendo was about to wind it down. I mean, like, it did, right? To me, it specifically has that, like, in terms of design, like that proof of concept, the link cable, like using something that it wasn't intended for, which is intended for multiplayer play, and the link cable became this data transfer thing that was all what made Pokemon, essentially.
I would also say that it is probably Nintendo's most successful use of inter-device networking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Easily.
That's not a compliment. So, Kevin, you had asked me previously, I guess, how I had gotten into Pokemon, and we were talking a little bit about the red-blue choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it that I was actually the only person in my friend group that bought Pokemon Red. It was... Everyone wanted Pokemon Blue.
Really?
All the boys wanted Blue. Because I almost wonder if it was partially due to... I'm going to go extreme here and say military fetishism.
Okay.
Because it is...
Okay. I'm with you so far.
Because on the box is this big old grumpy turtle with cannons on its back. And it basically, you know, it looks like a tank.
Mm-hmm.
It has the armor plating on it, and it's got this really kind of grumpy, threatening pose. Because it's like facing almost away from you and like turning back, it kind of looks like you just disrupted its nap.
Okay.
And so like everything about it seems threatening. And
Red? Red does? I thought Red sold
no,
better
in Pokemon.
Blue.
No, in blue.
No, the blue.
Okay.
Yeah. So I ended up picking up a copy of Red because I have a history of being, shall we say, non-conformative in the weirdest, in the most, like, mundane ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, I don't want to root for this team. Everyone's rooting for this team. And then you root for some other sports team, not realizing what actually rooting for a sports team supposed to mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, like, Pokemon got big for me in at the end of elementary school, and as I said, like, I was really into Tamagotchi. I was really into role-playing games at the time. There really weren't a lot of great Game Boy role-playing games. There were a couple of Final Fantasy games on it, yeah. And I had played through them. I can tell you almost nothing about them.
I have all three, in fact. I've played Legend 1 and Legend 2, and both of them are Saga. Both of them are based on, I think 2 and 3 are based on Saga Frontier. So they're not even real Final Fantasy games. They're Saga games.
Sure. This was our playground game, where we would get together with link cables, and we would, this was like our internet forum. This was our game FAQ forum. We would all get together on the playground near the swings,
mm-hmm.
and we would gather in circles where it looked like we were kid, like 11 and 12 year old kids dealing drugs or something. I was surprised.
Dealing pogs, you know?
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't get banned.
Did it ever get banned at your school? Because it did at mine.
Oh.
I went to a K-8, and I was like the moderator for a lot of trades in after-school program. Because like a lot of the little like first graders would trade each other and be like, oh my god, this fifth grader totally took my really good Pokemon and gave me like a starting Pokemon. Wow. And then so they would come, and the teachers were like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, this is a game. Like, why are you crying over this? And they'd be like, wait, Jen plays Pokemon. And so they'd come over to me and they'd be like, how do you fix this? And so it came to this point where it was like, all right, if you're going to do a trade, before you do a trade, you should go talk to someone older, like, I guess me. And then you should make sure that it's a good trade. So I think it was a good life lesson for a lot of kids because it was a, you know, non-monetary value. But you also learn that, you know, sometimes people are out for themselves and you should be careful of that. So that happens a lot.
Would you argue you were something of a diplomat of like a Cinnabar Island? Or
I was, sort of, yeah. Oh my god. Especially when the cards came out, because there was a monetary value, that became a whole nother that was a whole nother issue. But the game, I think, was a good lesson for kids. The cards was a good lesson for their parents to not let them bring cards to school.
And it allowed you to get experience as a financial advisor as well.
Exactly.
The Poke Broker. So I had a similar experience. Game Boys themselves were banned at my grade school. And I think even my high school. It was literally just if you had anything that looked like an electric device that wasn't a cell phone, they just take it.
I was like, what about Game Gear? Was Game Gear allowed?
They're only allowed on special days, like if we're going to have a sit-in day. I don't want to explain what a sit-in day is. Don't make me explain it, because it's actually, there's a different name for it, and it's really sad. I'm not going to explain it.
Sure.
Same thing, banned at my school, so like I could never, you couldn't just have that experience. I could not be a Poke Broker at all. I had to be a Poke Broker on the shadow market.
On the gray market?
Specifically, I mean, speaking of which, that was part of the reason I never got into Pokemon. I think I was a little too old by the time it came out. I was 18. But specifically, the second reason is Jennifer might prove, you know, her explanation kind of is the opposite of this, but I too was like kind of the only person of my friends who was really into video games, like into RPGs and just could play video games by myself. So I didn't have like a friend to share Game Boy games with, or like share a Pokemon experience with.
Yeah, I actually ended up, that's why I ended up with the Game Boy Color. Like, I'm sure that Pokemon, like you said, made Game Boys popular, but also probably led the whole, like, why people bought Game Boy Colors. Because, like, I didn't have anyone to share with, because it was mostly kids and they didn't put nearly as much time into it. So, like, if I wanted to get the endgame Pokemon, I couldn't, like, there was no one around to get them from. So I ended up getting 2 Game Boys and a link cable. And I bought both games, and I would just sit at home, like, pressing one button, pressing A on the other button, being like, yeah, let's go trade. And it's a really, like, interesting experience. And I have to admit, like, I think that stopped a lot of people, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that. But, like, I feel like the social aspect was a good motivator for most people. But, and then there was, like, that level of people that were just like, I'm going to commit to this.
Don't feel bad about the two don't feel bad about the two Game Boys. I used to play like two player games on Nintendo and Super Nintendo by myself with both controls.
Oh, nice.
Yes. For like similar reasons. Like, oh, I got to build these two characters up.
Plus, if you had both Game Boys, it was much easier to do the Pokemon cloning glitch where you could turn off one of the Game Boys and it would clone the Pokemon that was transferring between the two.
That's right. There were so many glitches.
So many glitches.
So good. Yep.
This is the big question that I think is closest to my heart, is on the concept of Mew.
Okay.
First of all, I guess, did you get a Mew in Pokemon Red or Blue?
I think I did, but it took me a long time to do it. So as you could probably tell from earlier, at this time in my life, I was a video game purist. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going to cheat to get this character. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going to play the game as it was intended. No glitches and stuff like that. But then towards the end is when I caved and I went to the internet. I think I'm pretty sure I remember doing that and being like, all right, how do I get these things? And then I think in the end I did. It's been a while.
Yeah, so I think that was possibly the first thing that I really used the internet for. This was, as I said, because I played in a group of people that this was what we would talk. And then when one person came in, when they were talking about, of course, they had an uncle who worked for Nintendo. I am not, that is what they, like... You know, I talked about that game endlessly previously about the concept of the uncle who works for Nintendo, and they were talking about, hey, did you hear about this character Mew? And I said, no, but I am in, I am yours. This is like, make up as much as you want. You will convince me of any and all of it. It was literally a 2-month investigation where this is what I did. I tried to do, you know, surfing up and down that coast in, I think it was Cinnabar Island, where all the missing nose were, and you could do, like, some rare candy glitch, trying to do that to get Mew, or there's a certain thing you could try to trade, or you could try to push this truck out in front of the SS Anne, and, like, literally anything that was possible without the use of a Game Shark or Game Genie. I tried it, and actually, I found out recently, I was like, hey, I wonder, was it ever actually possible to do it, like, to just get a Mew without going to a Nintendo event or without a Game Shark? Sure enough, yeah, there was.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting about it, is that when originally sold in Japan, when Pokemon was selling in Japan, it did okay. It was, like, not selling too well. And then when the concept of Mew and having to have two Pokemon games to get Mew between Red and Green, then that's when it exploded. It was like the most popular Easter egg of all time, like, or the most profitable Easter egg of all time. I always thought that was genius. I didn't even hint at Mew with the 150th Pokemon. They call Mewtwo. Well, and you're like, oh, well, what's Mew? I'm sure not a lot of 10-year-olds put that together right away. Oh, yeah. Just call Mewtwo. Maybe someone's a U2 fan.
Hey, to be fair, I did have a team that had I had Cubono on my team. I don't know how much longer I can go with this bit, but...
But yeah, so the idea of Mew is kind of what launched its popularity. I'm sure, you know, into the stratosphere, I should say. Not like it wasn't popular already. And then just that one idea alone of having a hidden Pokemon might be explain all of its worldwide acclaim and popularity today, to the extent that we have a worldwide popular Pokemon phenomenon.
Mew was also, I would suggest, the star of Pokemon the first movie, which I still have my ticket stub for. on the topic of Mew, Mew falls also into that category of the most adorable pink Pokemon. I want all of the pink Pokemon in this game because they're the cutest things. Oh my god. Except, like, none of them are useful. At least not in the Red and Blue, or, like, Red and Blue-averse. There's Jigglypuff. And Jigglypuff, to me, is like, that's like a style. That's like a style that I want to live. I went to a barber recently and said, give me this. And I held them a picture of Jigglypuff. And it was amazing because they knew what it was.
Let me ask you then, Jennifer. Favorite Pokemon v. least favorite. Like, what's a Pokemon you like that you knew sucked?
Oh, no.
It was like, oh. No good.
Oh, I was looking through that right now. It was probably, I was trying to look through them all. I remember the ones that I ended up liking the best, and that surprised me. That's the one that comes to mind first. The ghost Pokemon became really popular for me later on. Let's see, useless but cute. Chansey. Chansey was useless but cute. She was like, I protect eggs, and I make eggs. And it's like, what?
And her voice in the show.
Yeah.
Chansey.
Oh, yeah. Her voice was at least, you know, cute.
It was
and it
sweet.
Was like, okay, it kind of goes with how happy she is mm-hmm. and like things like that. It worked. Oh, Snorlax. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about Snorlax.
Snorlax is another style to live by.
Yep, he is. He really is. Yeah, he was fun. He at least had a good intro. Like, he made it like, oh, there's this Pokemon who doesn't do anything but sleeps, and he's blocking your path. What do you do? Like, it was kind of a fun intro puzzle for introducing a character. That was good.
Right, yeah, because also it was a Pokemon that existed outside of, I get like, the bushes. I think that was, like, the first experience. Exactly. Is, like, inside of towns, you sometimes see, like, oh, this character, like, this house just has, like, a Pidgey walking around, and you can talk to it, and it makes a Pidgey noise. But this is the first time, like, in the world where it's, oh, this thing is big.
Yeah, exactly.
I always found it really fun, like, looking at the Pokedex and it giving, like, and giving comparisons of, here is what this Pokemon looks like in size compared to you as a 10-year-old kid going out on their own. You're like, oh, that's an that Onix is, oh my.
Yeah, I did like the show for that, is that gave kind of perspective over, like, sizes of Pokemon, because you'd actually get to see them, like, fighting against real quote-unquote people. And that was kind of interesting to see, because some of them ended up way larger than I would expect. Like the Omanyte, it was like, wait, aren't you this little? Nope, you're huge. You're a huge seashell. Like, what?
Random thought. How many, I feel like Pokemon probably encouraged a lot of kids to become falconers. Like, oh, I have like a personal pet that I could use.
You would be surprised. In the Pokemon world that is presented, at least in the games, and to an extent in the show as well, the Pokemon are, these are the wild animals. There are, as far as I know, there's no things that are not Pokemon.
There's no cows. There's no, like, they don't, what meat do they eat? Do they eat Pokemeat? I don't know.
That is addressed in, I believe, a couple of episodes, but I think it's more kept in terms of, like, soy or,
oh,
like,
okay.
maybe artificially kind of things. Mm-hmm. But right, but like a lot of Pokemon have really sharp teeth. So I mean, like, what do they use that for? Who knows? But I wonder, because you play as a Pokemon trainer and you can therefore catch, well, I mean, maybe with the exception of cows or the like, well, I guess ultimately then there's Miltank, but you can then domesticate literally anything in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's, that concept is terrifying to me. Because it kind of creates this almost like biotech in a way, where it's, we're going to mold the earth strictly to our own kind of needs, which is strange, because when you're fighting against Team Rocket, I want to talk about Team Rocket for a long time. You know, Team Rocket is like strictly like, oh, we're going to, you know, Pokemon are ours to use, and we're going to control the Pokemon, we're going to control the world, we need this Pikachu for some reason.
Are you saying that this game, Jim, is a giant allegory for man's dominion over all of animal life?
100% yes.
and how man just naturally took over the animal world and had the animal world do his bidding, you know, his or her bidding, capital H.
Yeah, I do kind of feel like in this game, like, humanity is like an invasive species.
So you're saying Pokemon is a lot like real life?
In a, well, it's presented in this way, displaying like harmony, and, you know, I guess that's kind of the dream ultimately, is where we have like, oh, our lives are better, our dog's life is much, in quotes, better, whatever that means. You know, it's where it's kind of like a symbiotic in nature.
So harmony through servitude to man's whim.
I feel weird about that. Sometimes, like, you know, Zapdos just want to be free. Sometimes Butterfree just want to be free. That's why Ash releases it, and it's really adorable, despite me yelling, why would you ever release a Pokemon, Ash Ketchum, in that TV show?
We'll be right back on One More Turn.
Welcome back to One More Turn, where we're talking Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
And I'm Jen.
About Team Rocket. What's going on with them? What's the kind of their deal?
It's kind of an interesting thing, right? Like, they were basically the same as the player because they wanted Pokemon, but the only difference is that they were for profit. Like, that's the only different thing is, like, we're exploiting Pokemon not to fight, but to, like, sell them. And that's the only pretty much thing that makes them different. It's kind of interesting.
While a child, a real child at age 10, was playing Pokemon in the spirit of Ash, in practice, most children were Team Rocket. They were probably selling
pretty much,
off.
Well, sort of. Yeah. Well, right? Because, like, Team Rocket is basically the mob. They are organized crime.
They do have nice hairdos, too, I gotta say.
And a motto, like, and a theme song. You can't.
Just like the real mob.
Like, you are kind of participating in some of those, practices in the game, because there's Vegas. There is this center, like, gambling hall, which might be a lot of kids' first experiences with, like, a slot machine and the concept of gambling your money away. And also, oh, that shiny Porygon looks so tempting. But, like, you know, there's a level, like, inside of that hall where, like, you're kind of contributing in a way to this, like, financially to this organized crime ring.
Yep. There's definitely some dark stuff that kind of, like, if you thought about it too much, you're like, oh my gosh, this is for, like, this 10-year-old kid is going into gambling, like, you know, what's game house and, like, just throwing his money away, basically. And it wasn't gamified in the user benefit. Like, it took a lot of money that you spent in that game hall in order to, like, get the rewards that you wanted. it was not forgiving at all.
I remember there being, like, this, like, Team Rocket was using, like, Pokemon as, like, a workforce in a way. Basically, as a workforce they didn't have to pay.
Again, which, man's dominion over animals. Again, thank
right.
you.
Right, it's like, you know, well, we're just using them to fight and take each other's money. Like, oh, I'm fighting against, you know, bug catcher Jerry, who tells me that shorts are comfy and easy to wear. But then after I beat up his Caterpie, he has to, like, hand over some money. Kevin, you had mentioned about being knocked, the knockout mechanic.
In the show, obviously, because it's a children's show, but as a game, it's interesting that Pokemon don't die. I mean, Pokemon don't die, they just fade away. No, Pokemon don't die. They just get knocked out, and then Ash Ketchum or Jennifer Ash Ketchum can just, you know, collect them in her arms and nurse them back to health. Most video games, you know, from the house of Nintendo, you know, Nintendo, despite its squeaky clean reputation, a lot of killing in Nintendo games. Mario, Zelda, a lot of death. It's animated death, but this was when they actually made a point to say, no, your Pokemon doesn't die. Like, it just kind of loses, you know, it just gets knocked out. And that's
this massive electric shock isn't quite enough. Is enough to just, like, exhaust you.
Yeah, and I actually Tahira specifically wanted that in his game because he felt like, well, two reasons. One, he didn't think children understood death. And he didn't want to traumatize him. Like, you know, like, how sad are you when your first goldfish dies? You know, it bums you out. Or your first turtle. So this is in this instance, they don't want Squirtle to die.
Or Magikarp.
Yeah. I'm not super emotionally invested in Magikarp. There's the tower there's the ghost tower. I forget what specifically the name of it is, but that's the entire point of the tower. This is the graveyard of Pokemon. Mm-hmm. This is where Pokemon go when they actually die. I think even to this day, I know it's certainly on the Game Boy, it is the most, I would say almost like one of the most powerful and just one of the most morose moments.
Did they explain how they died? Like, is it like natural causes? Or is it no, like...
It's usually Team Rocket. They do an amazing job in this tower because, like, the music is haunting. All of the trainers that you fight in there are possessed, which is a little unusual. And everything in the tower is either a ghost Pokemon, which I have other questions about, or Cubone. I think Cubones appear in there, which it's in the Pokedex, it describes Cubone as a Pokemon that is mourning the death of its mother. What happened with this game? Like, why did it take this direction? And it's a section of the game you have to do. So I don't know if that, how that fits in, I guess, with this idea that, again, of the actions that you take normally don't have these resounding critical, like, to these critical effects. That, again, like, well, you're ultimately playing. They're like play fighting.
Well, can I ask, can that just be an Eastern philosophy thing? I feel like a lot of Eastern philosophy thing plays with the idea of spirits and ghosts a lot. I mean, all cultures do, but, sure. Like, it's more ingrained in sort of the creative output of it. Deals a lot more with ghosts and kind of mm-hmm. strange occurrences. Hmm. You know, Murakami is, like, a very popular... author from Japan, and a lot of his stuff has that kind of ghost feel to it, even though it's not necessarily ghosts in them. Mm-hmm. Is it something just as simple as that? It's just part of the culture, and when they're creating it, they just include it?
Maybe.
Sort of like how you might have a cross in Castlevania.
that's a different point. But yeah, they definitely take that. I'm just saying down to Shintoism. Because, I mean, this is like this large, it is like a large tower that is designated as a temple. And so, I mean, that's in the style of architecture as well. And so there's definitely that inspiration to that, more than just like, oh, we're going to simulate Chicago and put it in the middle of the Johto region or what have you.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting area. Like, even looking back on it, I had kind of forgotten it because it wasn't really like an action part of it, but there's, like, as soon as you mention it, there's this feel that comes back. It's like, oh man, I totally forgot. Like you said, the music's iconic. Like, the situation that you're walking through, you almost feel the silence of the space. Like, it's really weird, the atmosphere they made in this, like, virtual game that you're just walking through. Totally different feel than any other spots in the game. It's kind of interesting that they chose to do that and, like, kind of bring the like, yeah, we're out exploring adventure, and then it's like, oh man, serious moment right here. Like, you're going into, like, a giant graveyard. It's really interesting to think about now. As a kid, I didn't really, like, focus on that, but
I'm trying to fit it in with like you said, what Tahari said, he didn't want the kids to experience death or understand it. But as a kid, you do, like, yeah. Go into graveyards. You might, like, see a graveyard and you're like, hey, that looks cool. I'm going to run through that.
Yeah.
There is that fascination.
Yeah, it is a little unusual because, again, that kind of fights against almost that counteracts a lot of the other tone of the game, which is this, yeah, it is this very, it's basically like it's an adventure game. It is a, you know, you're a young boy going off to be the best at a thing. You know, you're not fighting God in this one, but, you know, you are, man, you're fighting the mob, which I guess, you know. But, like, the NPCs, even just, like, the world that you see, everyone is really helping each other, and, like, and there is this strong sense of community around it. And even, like, they have almost, like, these virtualization of other players in the game as well, where they have, you know, there's just characters just hanging around, standing in front of Game Boys, which I think is a little unusual. It just straight is, like, oh, this is another person, kind of, who wants to trade if you give them a Mr. Mime, they'll hand you a Jinx. But so again, like, there is this solid sense of community around this, and then there's this very kind of sullen moment to it.
There's also something kind of weird. So the reward you get from going through the tower apparently was the Pokemon Flute, mm-hmm. which allowed you to wake up Pokemon from sleep, which, if you tie it back to, like, all Pokemon aren't really dead, but they're just, like, sleeping, brings back to that too. It's like, oh wow, that's a weird connection. it's just got dark. it's like, oh man.
Yeah. And to think about it, if that Snorlax wasn't there, I would be a much happier Pokemon trainer.
So we've talked about here the dark side of Pokemon. There's gambling, there's profiteering, there's man's dominion over animals, there's these underground fighting rings. Basically, that is the essence of Pokemon. I want to know sort of final thoughts, you know, summing it all up, when you played it or why you would maybe recommend this game for people today. I'll start with you, Jim. Why Pokemon? Why was this such a great experience?
I enjoyed the community around this game. Growing up, this was a game that and this is actually a very important distinction for me personally, is that this was a game I did independently. I'm the youngest in my family. I have, you know, an older brother who I, you know, kind of idolized growing up. And so I would see, I guess, the games, you know, he would play and I'd be like, wow, these are the coolest things. And Pokemon was my first, like, major role-playing game that I did independently. And so that was, and could talk to people, you know, talk to friends. I could talk to, you know, I could talk to a lot of people. I could, you know, I would go to CCG tournaments at the mall, and I could just talk to strangers about Pokemon. And it was, it was a fantastic community. It was a fantastic way to get together and, you know, and learn things and to learn about, like, oh, actually, like, Kangaskhan can do this cool thing. Also, Kangaskhan is super cute. Also, a lot of these Pokemon kind of are, or like, hey, did you know, like, you could pretty much teach Starmie almost any move, and it's really odd. So, like, when you're fighting a Starmie, it could actually hit you with a lightning move or a psychic move, and you'll never see it coming. Like, oh, huh, that's really interesting. And so it really kind of sated this this curiosity that I have, like, that I have, and that, you know, you still see sometimes in my game recommendations that I give on this show, is that, like, I like toy boxes, and I like being able to kind of experience being able to pick up something, see what it can do, and then see how it kind of interacts with other things. And Pokemon was, like, involved building a team like that. So you could, like, put together a lot of different types of Pokemon, you know, outfit them out with a variety of abilities and the like, or just say nuts to it all and just make a party just solely of Clefairies and Jigglypuffs, which is kind of what I ended up doing at the end. I played Red, I played Yellow, and honestly, since then, I don't ever want to go back. Honestly, like, I feel like that is a point of my life that I'm just done with. Also, because I think I've been on the record saying that I don't like grinding. I don't like grinding anymore, and that's what Pokemon. That's what a lot of it is. Even with, I guess, new versions to the, even that they've handled, you know, experience in a different way. But it is a borderline sacred place in my childhood. And I still have some of the merchandise that I'd collected from that time. In a way, I've framed it now. I've framed it, and I don't really want to crack that frame open again. Yeah. So Jen, like, have your opinions, I guess, on Pokemon, like, changed at all from when you were originally playing it to now? Like, how do you think about Pokemon currently?
I guess for now, I think one thing I realized, there's more than two, but there's two reasons I kind of narrow it down to right now that I can see why I played it at the time. One of it is the characterization. The characters are fantastic. Like, they each have their evolved form. Their names are fantastic in terms of, like, telling what they do, but also kind of, like, being silly. Like, it had a really good balance between silly and serious, right? There's the hardcore, like, I'm a water type, so I'm going to beat your fire type. But at the same time, it was still, like, kind of lighthearted. So it was kind of a nice mix between the two. And, like, all the characters were really, I think, well thought out in how they were balanced in the game, which is what I enjoyed about it, which I didn't see in a lot of Pokemon games after Red and Blue for a while. And I think I heard that, I think it was Black and White, or X and Y, one of those, brought back that sort of feel of these characters are new, they're, like, evolutions of themselves and things like that. And I think that's part of what made me really enjoy it, was the characterization and, like, becoming, like, understanding the Pokemon and how they relate to each other, which brings me to the other point, sort of, in that Pokemon's a lot kind of like, so I like resource management games and, like, you know, things that basically are kind of like, become a project manager, Gabes, but level up your employee. Like, and so like a lot of that comes down to like, I really like games where you can organize to be the optimal like combination, right? And this is the optimal combination game. Like that's what you're playing here. And I think that's what it's rare that you find an RPG that you can like interact with that has that element to it while still being more battle-y, I guess. Most of those RPG games are like, can you profit? Like Cake Mania, right? And Diner Dash. Mm-hmm. They're resource management games where you're trying to make sure that you've got the right things going. But Pokemon is an RPG that does that. And I think that's what's really interesting about it is like, how can you use different types and make the optimal team? And there's no right answer. There really isn't. Like, you're not like, I need six. These six are my right answers. No, everyone has their own teams and their own, like, favorites and how they utilize them. And I think that's what's really interesting. And to see that it's still going on today where there's Pokemon tournaments, like, people, thousands of people come together and, like, battle their teams and, like, you know, it's still going on today. And it's been how many years? Like, I think that to me is really interesting to see how many people, like, take ownership of their teams. It's kind of like their own little mini sports teams. Mm-hmm. And they just like go out and like you said, it's a social experience. You can talk about that moment that like, oh yeah, I battled my like, you know, Charmander against, you know, Squirtle and he totally just like took him out with this blah move, mm-hmm. right? And there's opportunity to customize and personalize that you don't see in a lot of games, especially as many characters as they created, mm-hmm. like 150 and then I don't know how many there are now. I don't even want to think about it.
There are 721 Pokemon as of today.
Oh my.
For some reason, I missed the Poketrain. I just never got on Pokemon. I think I was a little too old for it when it started. And it feels like it'd be my jam. Like I'm with you, Jennifer. I'm like so into resource management and like looking at a bunch of screens and like, is why I loved RPGs and a lot growing up is because there's so many like stats and resources you're managing and putting together and mashing together. So I can appreciate it from that point of view. Outside of that, I have no knowledge of this. what do you call a Pokemon novice? Like a newbie? Like, is there a name for it?
We call them Bulbasaurs.
Oh, okay. Like I said, my nephews love it, and I see them all the time bonding over it and doing a lot of the same things that you guys have been describing when you were in your own childhood. So I guess what we learned here is Pokemon spans all generations in terms of friendship.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cue Pokemon and music, friendship yeah. music.
Yeah, you mean the poker rap. We're just going to put a beatbox down and... I think I can still get through about half of the poker rep from memory.
You should might as well do it in the credits while I'm saying the credits.
I guess I brought it up. But so real quick, lightning round. Jen, you said you took Charmander, right?
Yep.
Kevin, what do you pick in the three? Are you a Bulbasaur? Are you a Charmander? Or are you a Squirtle?
I'd probably pick Charmander. I gotta be honest. I just like dragons.
Sure. Can I say? Like, Squirtle's also a solid choice because of the Squirtle's appearance in the television show with the Squirtle Squad. And he had sunglasses on. And he was, like, super cool. This is where Jim shows his true colors. Jim's a Bulbasaur person. There are not many of us. But really? And I'm kind of proud of it to this day because of when I see people wearing Pokemon hoodies... I think the Bulbasaur one is the most adorable because it has a little backpack built into the back. And I think that is the most amazing thing. And also, I'm spending all of my money on frivolous hoodies now. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us, Jen. Is there anything you'd like to plug? Is there any, whether it's any projects you have going on, any Twitter or anything like that?
Not really. I have my Twitter account, Jennifer Renee, but that's about it.
Great. Well, you know, thank you so much for joining us and talking Pokemon with us on One More Turn.
Thanks for coming on.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. One More Turn is produced, created, and hosted by Jim Stuholsky and Kevin King. You can do us a favor, rate us on iTunes or other popular podcaster sites. If you have any comments or questions about today's show, email us at onemoreturnpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any comments or questions for us directly, you can tweet us. I am at Yonder Hillside. Jim?
At Fuzziest Kitty.
And Jennifer?
Jennifer Renee.
IED is courtesy of Pixel Hate off his album The Revolution. You can find more of his music at pixelh8.co.uk. Blue Paint is courtesy of Breakbeat Heartbeat and the Waveform Generators off Breakbeat's album 2206. You can find more Breakbeat music at soundcloud.com/breakbeatheartbeat.
Kevin, what are we going to do next week?
Next week's show and tell. I did not hear the polka rap anywhere in that entire span of listing off the credits.